Despite the way it's portrayed on TV and in films, forensic science isn't really science at all. That's the message from UCLA Law School Dean Jennifer Mnookin. She contends that methods used to interpret different kinds of physical evidence, like fingerprints, that are presented in a court of law, haven't been rigorously tested, don't stand up to the rigors of science. Mnookin will be giving a public lecture on this at the University of Rochester at 5 p.m. tomorrow at the Rush Reese Library. But first, she joins us on Morning Edition. Good to have you here. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me. My pleasure.
Let me start by asking you to give us some historical perspective, if you would. How did the field of forensics develop separately from what we think of as laboratory science, and why did courts put their faith in it?
That's a great question. Lots of the forensic sciences did not emerge through laboratories or research scientists or universities. A number of them grew up kind of as appendages to law enforcement, where investigators were struggling to find out ways of producing more knowledge from the natural world. So this was a good impulse. There was nothing wrong with the impulse to try to make the world speak and to be able to collect evidence from better evidence from the things that they were looking at. But unfortunately, what it means is that many of these techniques were never really formally validated or carefully studied, but rather grew up through more of an apprentice system and through efforts for people to do kind of careful looking and make their best judgments rather than to analyze in a more careful or rigorous way.
Okay. So are there some kinds of forensic techniques that are considered less reliable than others, or any that do stand up to scientific scrutiny?
Absolutely. It's a continuum. So one of the most problematic ones, in my opinion, is bite mark identification evidence. Sometimes in cases involving, I mean, sometimes in murder cases and in other instances, there will be bite marks found on a body. And forensic odontologists will attempt to match those marks to the dentition of a specific individual. Frankly, we should not be allowing that in court. There's just, not only is there no evidence that it's reliable, but there's actually pretty good evidence that it's not reliable. There are researchers who have done a number of studies now that show that bite mark identification experts make a whole lot of mistakes and often can't even accurately identify whether a mark really is human dentition, much less whose it is. So that would be at one extreme. Regular DNA evidence with just one source, one biological source, or two sources where we know who one of them is, that's very reliable. That you can absolutely count on. In between are a variety of kinds of pattern evidence, and many of those are widely used, like fingerprint identification and firearms identification. And while there have been some studies to try to assess how accurate they are, there have not been nearly enough, and they're not as accurate as people tend to think they are.
Rochester has a long history with photography and imaging, so I want to ask you, what about evidence from sources like dashboard cameras and surveillance cameras or iPhones and things like that?
Yeah, great question. And absolutely, Rochester has an extraordinary history intertwined with photography. So with many of these technologies, the questions are about authentication and whether they could be or ever are faked, and also whether they can be interpreted accurately. So I don't think they raise the same kind of validity concern that some of the pattern identification methodologies do. But often photographs aren't self-interpreting. And when you get just a few seconds from a dash cam or a body cam and you can't see the broader context, certainly there can be significant dangers that it can be misleading, especially if you don't know what happened beforehand or afterwards.
Is there any reliable data about how often forensic evidence turns out to be a factor in wrongful convictions?
Wonderful question. Thank you. In our known wrongful convictions, and we only know about a fraction of the wrongful convictions that are out there, and most of the ones that we know about because of DNA testing that has led us to believe that we don't have the right perpetrator. In those known cases, when we go back and audit what went wrong, faulty forensic science appears in about half of those cases. So that doesn't mean that forensic science is wrong half the time. Let me be clear about that. But in the cases where we know we got the wrong answer, and we go back and we say, where were the problems? Faulty forensic science is one of the contributing factors in about half the cases. It's second only to erroneous eyewitness identification when we go back and look at wrongful convictions and try to audit the problems.
Certainly not insignificant. So the million-dollar question then here is, why do courts continue to allow this evidence to be presented?
It's a great question, and it's one I've spent a chunk of my career puzzling over. I think part of it is because of the power of precedent in courts. Some of these technologies and techniques have been around for a very long time. Fingerprint evidence has been used since, 1911. Firearms evidence has also been used since the early part of this century. And so judges are, and this is kind of understandable, they're reluctant to exclude or radically change kinds of evidence that we've been using for a long time. Now, there have been two major reports that have looked at forensic science. One was almost exactly a decade ago. In 2009, the National Academy of Sciences released a blockbuster report looking at forensic sciences in America and reached conclusions pretty similar to what I'm sharing today. More recently, just a couple of years ago, the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology under President Obama also released a report, and they too found significant concerns with pattern identification evidence. It's something of a puzzle to me that those reports by very distinguished, august bodies that looked at the issue very carefully haven't had more influence in the courts than they have.
Given what you just said, is there any reason for optimism that this will change?
Well, I think the glass on this is both half empty and half full. There have been some moves in positive directions, with fingerprint evidence in particular, partly because of a misidentification, of a mistake that got a lot of attention and that got the attention of practitioners. The fingerprint community and the fingerprint leadership have taken this project of researching the field more seriously. And there's been some high-quality work done that's really helped us understand better the strengths of fingerprint evidence and also its limits. Some judges, too, while very, very, very few have excluded these kinds of evidence, a number of judges have restricted it a little bit. They've required more careful descriptions by experts. They haven't let them make wild overstatements like a zero error rate or the ability to identify a print to the exclusion of everybody else in the universe. They've pushed for more modest ways of talking about the probative value, the meaning of the evidence. And so these are steps in the right direction. For several years, there was a National Commission on Forensic Science, and it was doing some really good work. Unfortunately, the Department of Justice decided not to continue that commission. So, there's some reasons for optimism, but it's been moving very slowly.
So what needs to happen now?
Well, I think it would be an incredibly positive thing for there to be another national commission of some kind that could bring together leading scientists with an interest in the area, with some lawyers and some practitioners and some policymakers to try to create change in an environment where people develop some trust and engaged around this. If we can't bring back some kind of national location for for engaging around the future of forensic science, I think the chances for substantial improvements in these fields and substantial improvements in the way the courts are handling these fields grows significantly dimmer.
That's Jennifer Mnookin, Dean of the Law School at UCLA. Tomorrow she'll be in Rochester for a public presentation at the University of Rochester called Flawed Forensics, Why Troubling Expert Evidence Continues to Find Its Way to Court. It starts at 5 p.m. at the Rush Reese Library. Jennifer, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much, and I'm so pleased to be able to speak in Rochester.